أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. We seek the protection of God from Shaitan, who has been cast away from God's kingdom of extra mercy. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. We seek the assistance of Allah, because He is the absolute perfect being, because all perfection belongs to Him. And one of His perfect qualities is that He is universally merciful, meaning that His mercy reaches out to each and everything in the universe for every moment of its existence. And that He is Rahim, meaning that His extra mercy and extra love is abundantly and eternally available to those who believe in Him and who follow His guidance. You recall in the morning we said that the purpose of i'tikaf is so that you can become the guest of God in the house of God for the purpose of self-purification. And the word i'tikaf means to abide by something. You notice when you are making i'tikaf here, there are some people who are making i'tikaf outside. Literally, the word i'tikaf means to live in a particular way, to abide in a particular place. You notice, for example, when the Prophet Ibrahim confronted his people, as mentioned in Surah Shu'ara, that's chapter 26, verse number 70 onwards. God says, وَاتْلُ عَلَيْهِمْ نَبَأَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ. Incidentally, this incident I'm reading out to you from the Quran. I saw the same incident on television in Iran. Sayyid Muhammad Hussain Tabatabai was sitting there as a ustad. He had a young boy, 5 years of age, and he was instructing him to read the same verses that I'm reading from the Quran. And that boy read it from his memory. 5-year-old boy. Sayyid Tabatabai himself, of course, is 7 years of age now. He's become a teacher and he's got a student who's memorized the Quran. وَاتْلُ عَلَيْهِمْ نَبَأَ إِبْرَاهِيمَ. Ayah number 69 onwards, Surah Shu'ara, chapter 26. O Prophet, narrate to them the incident of the Prophet Ibrahim. إِذْ قَالَ لِأَبِيهِ وَقَوْمِهِ مَا تَعْبُدُونَ. Recall the time when he told his people, Ibrahim, O my people, what is this lifestyle that you have adopted? Who is it that you worship? You praise someone, you thank someone, you obey someone. Who is it? Obviously, they were worshipping the idols. Look at the response. قَالُوا نَعْبُدُ أَصْنَامًا فَنَظَلُّ لَهَا عَاكِفِينَ. We worship idols, and we consider these idols to represent the higher powers. We worship them. That means we thank them. We ask them for favors. We respect them. We offer them sacrifices. فَنَظَلُّ لَهَا عَاكِفِينَ. And our i'tikaf is on these idols. Everyone in his life, if he's got an idol that he's worshipping, it's as if he's making i'tikaf with that idol. Some people worship physical idols, which are material. Others worship non-material idols. They can worship money, they can worship power, they can worship the rich. That means they praise them, they respect them, they obey them, even if it's against the commands of God. That means these people are worshipping, and beyond that they are in the state of i'tikaf, according to the way the narration of Ibrahim tells us. So when you are in the process of i'tikaf, your i'tikaf is different from that of the i'tikaf of the other people outside. You have come as the guest of God in the house of God for the purpose of self-purification. The primary step in self-purification is tawbah. Tawbah means to return. Return implies that in your life you are moving on a journey, and as you're moving on this path, you come under the negative influences and you go astray. When you go astray and you realize you have made a mistake and you ask for forgiveness and then you change back to the original path, this process collectively is known as tawbah, the return. In order to appreciate the details of tawbah, the best example we have is the hadith which is narrated from Imam Ali, which is in Nahj al-Balagha, hadith number 417. Nahj al-Balagha has got three parts, the sermons, the letters and the sayings. Saying number 417, somebody came and said, Astaghfirullah, in front of Imam Ali. But he wasn't serious. He didn't declare his meaning correctly. And the Imam tells him that may your mother cry and mourn for you. It's a way of speaking whereby if somebody is not serious, you want to alert him and alarm him. Sakalatka ummuk. Do you know what really tawbah is? Do you know really what istighfar is? Then Imam explains to him, Al-Istighfaru Darajatul Illiyin. Istighfar is a particular station in life, in the life of those who live a high type of life. Illiyin. Illi is derived from the word Ali. Ali means high. We have two types of lifestyles. A lifestyle which is low, animal-like. A lifestyle which is high, which is true human life. A true human life is where you live a life centered around truth, centered around the remembrance of God, centered around the higher truths in life. One of the stations in this type of life, illiyin, is istighfar. So that's point number one that we need to keep in mind. Point number two then, Imam tells him that وَهُوَ إِسْمٌ وَاقِعٌ عَلَى سِتَّةِ مَعَانٍ. Tawbah in istighfar has got six meanings. أَوَّلُهَا أَنَّدَمُ عَلَى مَا مَضَى. The first meaning of tawbah is you must have a sense of guilt, a sense of shame, a sense of repentance over what you have done in the past. Step number one in tawbah therefore is, I must realize and I must acknowledge that I've done a terrible mistake. Without that, tawbah is not possible. So if in our salah between the two sajdas we say astaghfirullah, or if in the dua after the namaz, after the salah, we say astaghfirullah alladhi la ilaha illa hu al-hayyul qayyum three times. But if that first step is missing, that means the realization and the acknowledgement that I've made a mistake is missing, tawbah is not there. You see, of these six conditions, two conditions are essential for tawbah. Without these two conditions, tawbah is not there. The further two conditions are necessary for the tawbah to become complete. That's four. And the next two conditions are necessary for the tawbah to become perfect. That's six. But the two essential, inseparable conditions of tawbah. Number one, you must realize you've made a mistake. Now, where does this realization come from? How come so many people commit sins and they don't even want to make tawbah? The reason is because they don't realize that it's a mistake. Or if they know it's a mistake, they don't realize the seriousness of the mistake. If you look at the guidance that the ulama of akhlaq give us, for example Imam Khomeini and the others, they tell us, In order to get this realization, you must understand that sins are poisons. Imagine if you're eating food and there is poison in that food. Once that food enters your stomach, I experienced this. When we went to Nakuru and we went to that national park, when I felt sick, it was not because of the bull charge. It was because of the food I ate before the bull charged at me. See, when we all went up on the hill to have a better view of the animals down there, suddenly something happened. We don't know what happened. We don't know what triggered off the bull to charge. Was it because we were trying to invade into the territory of the bull? I don't know. Was it because some anxious, enthusiastic tourist-like student was flashing camera at the bull and that distracted him? I don't know. Was it because of all the noise that was being made by the students as they went up the hill and that disturbed the bull? I don't know. For whatever reason, the bull charged. And I was the first one online there in my kanzu and in my slippers. I couldn't run. Obviously, at that time, you don't think. You work on instinct. You want to save your life. So you run. So I started running. But because I couldn't run, I slipped and I fell. And that saved me. Because when I fell, for some reason or the other, bulls don't attack people who are on the ground. He just crossed over me. So the only injury I suffered was by falling down on the ground. But when I went to Nairobi the next day, I started having fever, and I started having headaches, and I started having diarrhea. And that was not related to the bull. Well, the reason was because the food I ate before that, it happened to have a certain portion of the meat which either wasn't cooked well. I don't think so, it wasn't cooked well because it was soft. But definitely must have been exposed to the heat. One of the biggest enemies as far as meat is concerned is the moment you expose it to high temperatures, the likelihood of bacteria growing in that is very high. After that, even if you take that meat and put it in the refrigerator, it doesn't matter. The poison of the bacteria is already there in the meat. When you take it out from the refrigerator and you warm it again, and you eat that meat, you're going to suffer food poisoning. It's a terrible experience. You see, what I underwent is, in addition to the fever and the diarrhea, I started feeling dizzy. The body was trying to push out the poison. How does it do that? Well, what it does is it makes sure that the poison is not taken inside the body. So there's a lot of fluid that comes out, and that comes out in the form of diarrhea. God has created the body in such a way that it can protect itself from food poisoning by diarrhea. One other way you protect yourself from poison is you make sure if the food is taken recently, vomit it out so that it doesn't have a chance to get absorbed into your system. Because once it enters your system, the chances of fever and advanced disease is very high. What our ulama of akhlaq tell us is, just like the way you act with the physical poison, consider the sin to be a spiritual poison. Because whatever you see which is haram, whatever you hear which is haram, whatever you feel which is haram, whatever you do which is haram, it doesn't go and kill your physical body, it goes and poisons your spiritual body. It goes and poisons your spirit. And once your spirit is poisoned, it either acts rapidly or slowly over a period of time. And then you notice that your love towards God is decreasing. Your love toward prayer is decreasing. Your readiness to act on virtues is declining. Your interest in sins is increasing. You enjoyed it the first time, now it's easier for you to enjoy it the second time. The fresh, pleasant memory of listening to that haram music, it's there. Those pictures in the mind of seeing the music video, they're there. And they're giving you that secret joy and they're inviting you toward it. Essentially, therefore, the first step in Tawbah is we must realize that on our journey toward God, we need to maintain a pure spirit, and every sin is a poison that's slowly killing us from within, to the extent that when you reach God finally, you may not even have a human spirit anymore. You get to Him and you're in the form of an animal. So step number one is we must realize that we have done something wrong, and that wrong is terribly serious, so serious that it is killing our iman. Step number two, and that's again essential for tawbah. Without this, tawbah is meaningless. In this hadith, Imam says, الثاني العزم على ترك العود إليه أبدا. You must make a firm determination not to return back to that way of life. Otherwise, tawbah is meaningless. If you ask me, am I going to eat meat now? And I'll tell you, I'll be very careful. Even if I go to the best restaurants, I want to make sure that the meat they cook is pure meat. I've experienced the pain, I've experienced the headaches, I've experienced the fevers, I've experienced the diarrhea. I even passed out. I don't want to repeat that mistake again. I'm determined, and I'm intense in my determination, not to return back to that poisonous environment. True tawbah has a second condition, therefore, without which tawbah is meaningless. There must be a firm determination not to return. Before I go to the third condition, let me elaborate a little further. You see, in our journey toward God, God is ready to give us mercy, God is ready to pull us, God is ready to invite us, God is ready to guide us. But in order for that to happen, for His mercy to flow, our hearts have to be clean. If the heart is poison, God's mercy doesn't flow in. In order to remove this poison, that sense of guilt and shame and that sense of feeling sorry and that sense of feeling bad about yourself, the ulama tell us that resembles a little fire that you are lighting up in your heart. We will not go to Jannah unless we are pure. In order to purify us, God sends us to the hellfire. We face the hell, and that hellfire changes us. It changes us so much that we begin to hate the sin, so much so that we don't even want to think about it. That's the function of the fire. But before the fire of hell, God purifies us in the barzakh. The moment a person dies and his soul enters the barzakh, if he's a sinner, then God makes him suffer, because in the suffering of the fire of barzakh, that hatred is created for that sin. All traces, all signs, all attractions towards sin are removed. But tawbah is an opportunity for us to create the fire by ourselves in the dunya. That sense of guilt and shame and sorriness for yourself, you feel bad about yourself, you're uneasy, you're uncomfortable, that's literally creating a fire within your heart. And you're burning out that sense of joy in the sin. To the extent that this fire is strong, to that extent it will wash out and burn out the sins. To the extent that it is weak, the effects of the sins will remain and you will want to go back to the sins. So step number one is shame and guilt and feeling sorry. Step number two, the determination not to return. Step number three, Imam says then, أَن تَعْمِدَ, that you must go and find out what are the rights of other people that you have denied, and you go and compensate or you go and recompense for any damage that you have caused. So you have the three steps. A, you acknowledge you have made a mistake. B, you feel bad about it. C, you want to make a change. Because you are determined not to return back to it, the only way you can not return back to it is you make sure the damage that you have made in the past, you repair that damage. How do I repair the damage? It depends what damage have I caused. Have I broken the law of God as far as my relationship and duty between me and my God is concerned? Have I disrespected somebody else? Have I taken somebody else's property away? If I'm serious and I know that this is a poison that's working against me, I want to make sure that this poison is removed. In medical terms, when you have taken poison, you take antibiotics, and through the process of antibiotics, you make sure the bacteria is killed. Likewise, in the spiritual health, you need to make sure, if you have disrespected someone, you win back his respect. If you have denied someone's right, give it back to him. If you have failed to perform your duty towards God, you're supposed to have prayed, but you didn't pray, you forgot, or you were lazy, or you were distracted, then you may need to make qadha. You should have fasted, you did not fast. You need to repay the fast. You see, you cannot expect somebody else to pray for you. You can't say, because after I die, I will leave behind some money and somebody else will be hired to pray for me. Or, if I haven't fasted, then I can pay someone some money to fast for me. It doesn't work like that. If you can imagine the ibadah as some necessary spiritual food. If you don't eat enough food, you don't grow. If you don't grow, you don't have the strength. You don't have the strength, you remain weak. If you remain weak, you cannot reach that goal that God has kept for us. You cannot expect somebody else to eat for you and you get the strength. You have to pray yourself. The soul has to experience the spirituality of salah, of standing up before God, of remembering God, of bowing down before God, of having that humility in the heart, of prostrating before God, of having that submissiveness in the heart. The spirit has to grow by itself. If it hasn't grown in the past, now is the time after Tawbah to repay. By fasting, the spirit has to learn to control itself. I won't take names, but I've come across people who say that I just can't control myself. When I see food, I can't control myself. So what do? I either travel when I'm fasting. You're allowed to travel in fasting. It's not haram. It's just that you have to repay later on. Or I try to sleep most of the time during fasting so that I can avoid the temptation of food or drink. But he's missing the point. The fast is designed to train ourselves that even when we face the temptations, we're strong enough to say no. Even when we're faced with food, we can stay without food. We can stay without drink. We can stay without legal sexual contact with our spouses. And that gives us that spiritual strength. A person who doesn't fast and doesn't make qadha for it, his spirit remains weak. So the philosophy in tawbah of repaying the losses of the ibadah is that the spirit should become strong where it has remained weak. So step number one, we must acknowledge the mistake. Step number two, we must feel bad about it. Step number three, we must start making a change. The change is, in the past, we must repay. For the present, if we have damaged anyone, we provide for the losses. And for the future, the change is, we must not repeat the mistake. So up until now, I've mentioned four conditions. Two which are essential, without which tawbah is meaningless. Two are necessary for the tawbah to be complete. That's four. Two more are there for the tawbah to become perfect. Imam tells that person, condition number five is, number three is, if you have not performed ibadah, make qadha of it. Number four is, if you have taken away somebody else's right, pay back to him. Number five is, if you have earned something by haram, and your body has grown through that process and has gained strength and has gained body weight, then what you need to do is you need to melt that fat away. That's a perfect condition of tawbah. It's not a necessary condition. It's not a condition for the completeness of the tawbah. It's a condition for the perfect tawbah. That if in the past you have eaten something haram and your body has grown fat, you need now to melt that fat away by starvation or by fasting. And fasting should be in such a way that when you break the fast, you don't try to eat everything that you've missed in the whole day. You eat that very little that you're supposed to eat as if you're having a normal supper. And condition number six, for the tawbah to become perfect, it's not necessary, it's not a core essential condition of the tawbah, It's not a condition for a tawbah to be complete. It's a condition for the tawbah to be perfect. Is all those moments that you spent in enjoying the haram, now you spend an equal amount of time punishing yourself for it. So for example, you spend an hour watching a movie which is haram, or you spend an hour listening to music which is haram, for the same hour, or 2 hours, or 10 hours, or for whatever period, an equal amount of time, you punish yourself by strict self-discipline, by strict denial, and in the process, your soul becomes stronger. So if you have exposed yourself for 1 hour to music, correspondingly you expose yourself for 1 hour to hadith or to riwayat or to ayah or to majlis or to maw'idah that reminds you about death, that reminds you about punishment, that reminds you about the stories of people who are pious, that reminds you of what lies ahead of you. A corresponding balance to cancel out the pleasures by pain, so that you grow up healthy and you grow up spiritually. There are several verses in the Quran which encourages us to do. I'll just quote one verse and I stop here, and then I'm open for questions. In Surah Tahreem, chapter 66, in ayah number 8, God says, Ya ayyuhal ladhina aman, O those people who believe. That means you know there is a God, and that God has a plan for you. And in that plan, He has warned what is a poison for you and what is prosperity for you. So all those who believe, Tubu ilallahi tawbatan nasuha. When you make tawbah toward God, when you return toward God, that tawbah, that process of self-purification should be nasuh. Nasuh means there should be nasiha. Nasiha means the tawbah should be in such a way that you change for the better. Nasuha has another meaning. Nasuh means something which is pure. When you make tawbah to God, it should be purely for the sake of earning the pleasure of God, not that you want to escape the fire of hell. A third meaning of tawbah, which is nasuh, is nasaha means to stitch. God has given you a dress of taqwa. When He creates us, He creates us in a pure form. We have got a dress of taqwa. By making sins, we tear our clothes. Tawbah is a process of stitching back that dress of tawbah, that dress of taqwa. You know, Agha Lawasani was here some years ago. He was narrating an incident or an explanation or an admonition that was given to him by the son-in-law of Marhum Ayatollah Al-Khoi. Sayyid Mustambit was his teacher, was the teacher of Agha Lawasani. And Sayyid Mustambit says, imagine the sins to be dirt that comes on your clothes. Now the dirt that comes on your clothes can be of several types. Sometimes it's just fine dust. You can just brush it off. You've committed a sin, you've forgotten God, you've made a mistake. Astaghfirullah, you're sincere, you're honest, you're earnest, God forgives. The dust is gone. Sometimes the dirt is not dust. Sometimes it is mud that comes on your dress. For that you just can't remove it because the color changes. So what you do is just go and apply some water and it'll become clean. That's an easy one still. You have a third type of dirt where the stain is a fat and greasy one. Because the stain is greasy, let's say you're going to eat something in your iftar, it's made of curry and the curry has got some colors and that color is dissolved in oil and fat. If a drop of oil or fat falls on the white clothes, incidentally, we're recommended to wear white clothes. One of the reasons is because we must always be clean. Whenever a white cloth becomes dirty, it shows very clearly. So if you have a fatty or greasy stain on your clothes, you just can't remove it by water. You need to apply soap which will dissolve, the detergent will dissolve the grease. And once the grease is dissolved, then it comes out. There's a fourth type of dirt, which will not even come out with the detergent. If it's something like kerosene, if it's something which is even worse than greasy fat, you need to use kerosene. There's a fifth type of dirt where no water is going to help you, where no detergent is going to help you, where no kerosene is going to help you. You simply have to cut that dress out, that portion. that's when you make it clean. Likewise with sins. Sins differ in the degree of the damage that they cause to the soul. And therefore the degree to which you need to repair varies. Sometimes it's a simple istighfar. Sometimes you need to change your past. Sometimes you need to undergo strict self-denial and self-discipline. Let's pray to Allah to give us the tawfiq to be able to realize our mistakes and to make that firm determination to change ourselves, to repair our past damage, to pay our qaza, and to have the courage to strictly discipline ourselves for the future. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. If there are any queries or questions? Yes, please. Yes. 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 The question is asking if you are guilty and you're ashamed of yourself and you feel really bad, then God will forgive you. Then what about the second time? Because that's what I mentioned. Tawbah has two essential components without which Tawbah is not true. Component number one is to feel ashamed of yourself, to feel sorry. Component number two, depending on the intensity of this fire that's burning within, you will be determined not to repeat the mistake. So if your tawbah is true, you won't repeat the mistake. But if you make, by mistake again, you make the sin, then God's doors are open. You can go back and ask for forgiveness. Yes. Yes. Right. Yes. Right. 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 Yes. Yes. Now that's he's asking, sometimes people are so addicted to a particular wrong lifestyle that they may feel sorry and guilty and ashamed of doing that sin, but then they go back to it again. That means tawbah has not been done properly as yet. You see, that fire of guilt or shame is not burning brightly as yet. That fire needs to become stronger. To make it stronger, what needs to be done is you need to realize that the mistake is much more serious than what you think right now. It's basically a poison. A poison can kill you within minutes. You know how Dr. Kervokian works in the United States? Mercy killing? You know how he works. Dr. Kervokian, suppose you are a terminally ill patient. You've got a cancer for which there is no cure, for example. And you are suffering tremendous pain. You're given painkillers, but still the pain is there. You're living a miserable life of pain and suffering. So these patients come to Dr. Kervokian and say, please, give us some drug that we die. We just can't tolerate anymore. So what he does, he sets up an intravenous flowing fluid, and then he puts in some cyanide or some potassium, which within seconds to minutes goes to the heart and makes it stop working. Within seconds. If we imagine our sins to be poisons that are killing not our body but our soul, the moment we realize this, there's never ever a moment we'll go back toward it. You know, why do the masoom not commit sins? Can you ever imagine going out in a naked state? You are repulsed by it. Can you imagine yourself eating dirt and filth? You are repulsed by it. Same way, the masoom knows that to speak lies is fire. I will never play with fire. They have that state of realization. They have that state of awareness. They have that strength of faith. A person who says he feels sorry but returns back to the sin hasn't realized as yet the true seriousness of the mistake that he has done. He needs to improve his faith. Yes, please. Yes. Yes. The question is, suppose I am not in a position to repay the damage. There's a hadith about fasting that a person broke his fast purposely. A person who breaks his fast purposely, he has to free a slave, or he has to feed 60, or he has to fast 60 days. So this man came before the Prophet. I broke my fast deliberately. So the Prophet says, why don't you ask for forgiveness and free a slave? I don't have the capacity to free a slave. Why don't you feed 60 people? I am not so rich to be able to feed 60 people. Why don't you fast for 60 days? I'm not healthy enough to fast for 60 days. The Prophet said, why don't you ask for forgiveness? God never ever puts a burden on a person beyond his capacity. La yukallifu Allahu nafsan illa wus'aha. Whether it's fasting, whether it's hajj, whether it's homs, whether it's salah, whatever ibadah, it is always beneath our capacity. Our capacity is much higher. Should a situation arise which is beyond our capacity, God doesn't expect that from us. There are other alternatives. Look at this man. He was asked to go and make istighfar. Let's pray to Allah to give us the tawfiq to be able to make tawbah and change our lives and become determined not to go back to the wrong lifestyle. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.